Ratings agencies overrated?
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Stacey Vanek Smith. Ratings agencies are the newest targets of regulatory scrutiny. Those are the guys who gave the seal of approval to bundles of nearly worthless mortgages and helped get us into the financial mess we're in today. Many have been criticized for the cozy relationship they have with banks. Now, the Senate's approved an amendment to the financial reform bill that would increase regulation of ratings agencies. Our own John Dimsdale joins us live from Washington to explain. Good morning, John.
Good morning, Stacey.
So, John, what are some of the new rules?
Well, no longer could banks decide who gets to grade the safety and soundness of their products. Instead, the government would certify the rating agencies and then assign one of them to look at the investments that are issued by banks and other financial entities. And that's a big change. There are now only three big credit rating agencies, Moody's, Standard & Poor's, and Fitch Ratings. And this Senate amendment could open up that business to a lot more competitors.
Why are the ratings agencies being targeted?
Well, in this last financial crisis, many of the shaky, toxic assets that failed had been given A-plus ratings. But it's going to be tough to just get rid of the agencies. They're important under the current system, since pension funds and mutual funds can frequently only invest in products with safe ratings. Still, critics like Dean Baker at the Center for Economic and Policy Research wonder whether they're really needed.
Some could dispute how necessary they are, given how bad they've been. It's almost as though, you know, suppose we randomly ran around with all the issues and gave some investment grade, some junk, and that didn't actually correspond to anything in the world. It was somewhat random. I don't know if that would be all that much worse than what's actually happened.
John, what's the timeline on this bill?
It really has a lot of momentum and could be approved by the full Senate as early as next week. It then has to be reconciled with the House-passed version before it goes to the president's desk.
John Dimsdale in Washington. Thank you, John.
You're welcome.
Yesterday, the Senate also voted to reduce interchange fees. Those are the fees credit card companies charge merchants when you swipe your card. Businesses say those fees are too high and force them to pass them on to consumers by raising prices. Worries about Europe have the markets feeling blue this morning. London's FTSE is down 1.8%. Germany's DAX is off 1.33%. Yesterday, the Dow Jones Industrial Average ticked down 1% to close at 10,782. Today, seven more states join a lawsuit against the Obama administration's health care plan. All told, 21 states are now protesting the requirement that everyone buy health insurance. Jill Barshay reports.
The new law requires virtually all Americans to carry health insurance by 2014. Robert Muse is an attorney at the Thomas More Law Center. The group has also filed suit. Muse says the government is allowed to regulate interstate commerce, but
that doesn't necessarily mean that the federal government can force people to engage in commerce, i.e. purchase things or engage in a commercial transaction.
It's rare that the federal government has ever made us buy stuff. Constitutional lawyer Ian Millhiser at the Center for American Progress had to go back to the Second Militia Act of 1792.
Which required a significant percentage of the U.S. civilian population to purchase guns and bayonets and other military equipment just in case they were ever called up for military service.
Millhiser says there's good reason for the new law, so that people don't wait until they're sick before they buy insurance, or else premiums for the rest of us will go up. I'm Jill Barshay from Marketplace.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Citrix, offering GoToMeeting, allowing people to hold meetings online to collaborate in real time. More at gotomeeting.com/market. By LendingTree.com. Tools and personalized advice to help control your financial destiny are at the all-new LendingTree.com. And by Constant Contact, working to help small businesses understand what social media can do for them. Learn more at constantcontact.com/social media.
We talked about the Senate's financial reform bill at the top of the show. It's starting to take shape. Robert Reich is professor of public policy at Berkeley. He's here to give us his take on the legislation thus far. Good morning, Robert.
Good morning, Stacey.
So, Robert, it was week two in the Senate's battle over financial reform. Who's winning?
Well, one winner was the Federal Reserve. Originally, remember, the Senate planned to strip the Fed of its power to oversee banks because it had done such a lousy job before the crash of 2008. But the bill now lets the Fed keep all its authority over big and small banks. You may also remember, Stacey, the criticism of the Fed for keeping secret the payments it made to banks that contracted with bailed-out insurer AIG. Well, a measure that would have subjected the Fed to ongoing review was watered down to a one-time-only audit.
How about the banks? How did the biggest banks come out in this?
Well, the biggest are quite likely to remain too big to fail, Stacey. An effort to cap the size of the biggest banks was voted down, as well as a measure that would have required the big banks to pay into a fund to be used in the event that a big bank was at risk of failure. A requirement that big banks spin off their lucrative derivative trading businesses is still in there, but it may not survive beyond Tuesday. That's when Senator Blanche Lincoln of Arkansas, who introduced it, faces a primary challenger from her left. Also still in the bill is the so-called Volcker Rule, barring big banks from trading on their own accounts, owning hedge funds and private equity funds. The banks hate this and will try to narrow it.
Polls show huge public distrust of Wall Street, and midterm elections, of course, are only months away. Why isn't the Senate doing more?
You got to remember, the street, Wall Street, that is a major campaign contributor to both parties. Besides, Stacey, most of the public doesn't understand the details of finance. So it's relatively easy for the Senate to sound tough while creating a lot of loopholes.
Robert Reich is professor of public policy at Berkeley and was the Secretary of Labor under President Clinton. Thank you, Robert.
Thanks, Stacey.
And finally, fast food keeps pushing the bar lower. The price bar, anyway. There was McDonald's dollar menu, Subway's $5 footlong, and now Taco Bell has just unveiled a $2 combo meal. It includes a taco or burrito, a medium soda, and a bag of Doritos. If you're trying to be healthy, you're out of luck. A salad at Taco Bell costs about $5. In Los Angeles, I'm Stacey Vanek Smith, and this is the Marketplace Morning Report.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.